This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on every purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. Is there anything better than singing along to your favorite song with your best pals in the car? There's a reason why road trip mixtapes and playlists are so popular, why the road trip movie is an enduring genre. Being on the road with your friends means freedom. It means adventure. That's how Maggie Rogers felt when she was making her new album, Don't Forget Me. With her co-producer and co-writer, Ian Fitchuk, at Electric Lady Studio in New York City, Maggie made the album with the pedal to the floor in only 5 days. And she did it in the spirit of any great road trip, with the willingness to just see where the road, or in this case, a song, might lead, and taking turns that felt interesting, resulting in an album of free-spirited songs that mostly consist of first takes. In our conversation today, Maggie will talk about making the album, the movies and music that inspired it, and why she wanted to bring her friends into her art. First, take a listen. From Don't Forget Me, here's It Was Coming All Along, Maggie Rogers on World Cafe. And I don't know just what to do. On World Cafe, you just heard It Was Coming All Along from Maggie Rogers' new album, Don't Forget Me. I'm Raina Duris. Maggie Rogers is here with me to talk about the record. Maggie, welcome back to the World Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to talk about the song that we just heard and the way that it starts, because this album, you know, overall, it feels so fun. It feels loose. It feels breezy. But lyrically, it starts in this kind of cooped up, anxious place, which is something I really noticed the second time I listened through. I noticed the first verse of the first song, and I'm just going to read the lyrics quickly. Everybody's going crazy. See them walking down the street, and I feel like a deer in headlights when I turn on the TV, and I keep wandering around my living room just wondering how we're going to survive. So you wrote this album chronologically, mm-hmm. which is, it's kind of unusual for someone to write the songs on a record in the order that they appear on the record. Could you tell us where your head was when you started the album, when you wrote those lines at the very beginning?
I mean, it's funny because I wrote this record a year and a half ago at this point, and I still feel exactly the way that verse says. You know, the second verse says, you know, I might sound existential if this is the first time that we meet. And like, I don't know. I do feel like a deer in headlights when I turn on the TV. Like, the world is really crazy. And I feel so lucky that in the middle of all of that, I get to take time and reflect on it and make music, and that I have a place for all of those feelings to go. But I mean, it is a really crazy time in the world. And I think for me, I keep coming back to music as a place of release or as a place of relief and as a place to just sort of take a big, deep breath. And I sort of hope that that's what this album can be for people. That's what it was for me anyway.
It feels like that, I think, from my perspective as a listener. And I know you wrote the album pretty quick. It took 5 days, 3 days in December of 2022, and then two in January of 2023. It's a potent time to be writing at the end of an old year and the beginning of a new one. And I was wondering if that did shape the album.
I mean, I think that the speed at which it was written, like, completely shaped the record. We were writing two songs a day. We is my co-writer and co-producer, Ian Fitchuk. So we were in the studio from 10 to 5, and we would write one song before lunch and one song after lunch. And this was the first time we'd ever worked together, and it just worked. And I think that part of why it worked is that we made a record by not trying to make a record. You know, I knew that I had this big block of time off in March. So this was really, the whole point of this was just, hey, Ian, like, why don't we sit down and just shake hands and see if we come away with like a verse or a chorus, it'll be a total win. It was the last couple of days before the holidays. Like, let's just go in and experiment and have fun while we're all on our way home for Christmas.
Yeah.
And it just worked. And I think because the pressure was so off, there was this real sense of playfulness that I think that you can hear in the record as well. And it just felt like going back to writing songs like I used to when I first started writing like 15 years ago. It really was just for the love of the game.
Yeah, a lot of what we hear on the album are first takes, right?
Almost all of them. I mean, I thought that this record was going to be a series of... I thought that these songs were all just a series of demos that I was going to re-record with the band, and I was thinking about going to some classic studio in the South, like Muscle Shoals, and getting together this big group of musicians. And then I think actually because they're all first takes, Ian and I were able to capture something. Like, it almost feels like a live record with just the two of us playing everything. I didn't go in saying, I want to make a record that feels like this. I just sort of like blinked and this is what came out. But inevitably, I really made a record that was designed for like a car. It's kind of a driving record. It's like a Sunday afternoon driving record. And to me, like the records that have found me in those places are the ones that I have kind of the most intimate relationship with, because it's the ones I go to spend time with that's really relaxed and really personal.
Yeah. I mean, the car, we think about this a lot in radio. It's like you're talking to somebody, you're mm-hmm. singing to somebody who's often alone. It's like the time you hear music, the time you hear talking, it's when you wake up in the morning, your radio's on, or in the car, when you're by yourself. And it is very intimate.
It's really intimate. And I think also, like, to me, the greatest privilege or joy of what I do is getting to spend time with people soundtracking those intimate, quiet moments.
Yeah. I'm speaking with Maggie Rogers on World Cafe today. She has a new album called Don't Forget Me. We'll come back and talk more about how the album began to take shape in a few minutes, but I want to play another song from it first, the song So Sick of Dreaming. And there's an interlude in this song, a recording of a voice talking about a bad date. Is that you talking, Maggie?
That's me talking, yeah.
What was behind your decision to use these clips? Because there are other little like audio clips in the record.
Yeah, there are. I mean, again, this is sort of connected to the process of making the record. Which is that we had this instrumental section. I imagined at some later date we would go into a studio and some great guitar player would fill that instrumental space with something really complicated and nuanced. So I just made up this story and this like sassy character to sort of just like make everyone in the room laugh. And it was a one take and it was just supposed to be a placeholder. And then it was so like campy and like reminded me of Clueless and Shania Twain. And like, I loved the character that came to life in this song, because I don't think that I would ever really write these lyrics or say these things about a relationship that I've been in. Like, I feel a real instinct to protect the people I've been in relationships with and to really care for them in my music. And this story was sort of written, it was a story told to me about a friend of a friend. And I sort of like just picked up on that emotion and created this really sassy character about it.
Let's hear it. It's So Sick of Dreaming. This is Maggie Rogers on World Cafe.
Walking on the water like they're stepping stones, but every little thing's up for taking. Oh, it makes me want to sing, my heart's breaking.
On World Cafe, Maggie Rogers, So Sick of Dreaming from her new album, Don't Forget Me. I'm Raina Duras, hanging out with Maggie Rogers today. So that audio clip you used in that song that we talked about before we heard it, you know, you said it was influenced by Clueless and Shania Twain. Also has a real Sex and the City vibe to
yeah,
it.
Totally.
I mean, I can imagine Samantha getting ditched for a date by some guy who has Knicks tickets
completely.
And drinking two martinis at a bar.
I mean, I rewatched all of Sex and the City during the pandemic. So when I made this voicemail, it was just total like improv in the moment.
Yeah.
But looking back, this like Clueless, Shania, Carrie Bradshaw, I mean, these are all really important characters in my life. So, of course, they found their way into the record.
I have to asking the really important questions here on World Cafe, which Sex and the City character would you be?
I think I am a Carrie Miranda cusp.
Mmm. Interesting.
What about you?
I feel like I'm probably a Carrie Samantha.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Spicy.
I know.
Let's
don't know.
Let's go, Raina.
Should I be saying that on an NPR show? Well, anyways, there it is.
I love that answer.
I mean, you mentioned like Thelma and Louise, Shania Twain. These are big female friendship pop culture touch points. Like, I've absolutely done Man, I Feel Like a Woman at karaoke.
Totally.
Many
times.
And I know you've said, like, you know, you didn't go in with this, with a plan or an idea, but looking back, why do you think the concept of this ride or die friendship, especially female friendship, was something you kept coming back to when you were working on this record?
I mean, it's something I've come back to throughout my catalog. I mean, there's a song on Surrender called I've Got a Friend that is basically a love song to my best friend. There's songs on Heard It in a Past Life that are really odes to my friends. Songs like Dog Years on my original EP was about sort of all the friends I was leaving behind as I was graduating from college. But I feel like I have the best friends in the entire world. And as my career started in this crazy whirlwind way, like 8 or 9 years ago, my friends really kept me grounded and showed up for me and came on the road and told me when I was overthinking things. And they're the most important people in my life. And I'm so unbelievably in love with my friends. And so I think also all of these great like female heroines that you've mentioned that have been themes in my work, they are the people, like I really wanted to make a record that you could sing along with in the car. Because to me, like when I'm belting that Shania record in my car, she's my best friend. She is like the person riding in my passenger seat at that moment. And I think I've had so many moments where people have come up to me and said, I listened to your record on a road trip with my girlfriends. And to me, that is like one of the most special and intimate. And I don't know, it's just cool.
I really love that. I don't think I've ever thought of it that way before, but you're absolutely right. Like that person you're singing along to with in your car is your best friend.
It's your best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
Perfect.
I mean, yeah.
You do name people in the songs like Nora and Molly and Sally and Anna. Are they real people?
They're real people. Yeah, they're all some of my best friends. I mean, Nora, on It Was Coming All Along, there's a voicemail from my friend Nora.
That's really her. Okay.
Oh my God. You know what's amazing? I had that line like, oh, I've still got Nora on the phone. And I said to my co-producer Ian, I was like, I wonder if we could get Nora on the song. And I put my phone on speaker and I held it up to the microphone. And I was like, let's just see how she picks up the phone. And she picked up the phone and went, hello. It's like, oh my God. It couldn't have been more perfect.
How do your friends react when they hear their names in your songs?
I mean, I think after I've Got a Friend, which is such an intimate portrait of my best friend, Taylor, to me, bringing my friends into my world, or rather letting the world in on my best friends, just felt like starting to relax the lines between my public and personal and private life. Because I think when I became a public person, it happened very, very quickly. I'm sort of referencing this like viral video of me and Pharrell Williams that changed my life overnight. And it really, really scared me. And my reaction to that was just that I put my guard up and my first instinct was to really protect myself. And I'm coming into this moment now where I've been doing this for 8 or 9 years. I'm about to turn 30 and I just feel really okay with it all. I feel really grounded in it. I've normalized in it. I have found my way through it and I just don't feel so scared anymore. And I feel so much more comfortable not even just blurring those lines, but just like being a little bit more relaxed in all of it and not worrying so much. And I think that has let all of the fun and the joy of this music also sort of come through.
I'm talking to Maggie Rogers today on The World Cafe. Maggie, you said that while you were writing the album, and this is a quote from what you wrote, at some point a character emerged. We've touched on that a little bit, but could you describe this character to us and the way that you see her in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I was writing this record so quickly. We spoke earlier that it was 10 songs in 5 days, that At some point, this character emerged, and she was like 23, 24, so like 4 or 5 years younger than me. She was leaving a relationship on a road trip through the American Southwest, making her way in my brain. She was making her way to Los Angeles to meet her friends and start a new life. And it's kind of a version of who I was when I was 23, 24, but I never went through that road trip breakup. And I had sort of seen Thelma and Louise on a plane recently and had that sort of wonderful, dusty motel world in my head. And I think that finding this character and imagining these songs almost like scenes in a film helped me keep momentum or helped me have some spark about where to go next in the music. Like there's a song called Never Going Home, which is about sort of a girlfriend taking our lead character to a bar. She's trying to get over some guy and she's like sort of hooks up with someone and she's not really ready to. And she's sort of, it's okay. And it's kind of confusing, but you know, she's still pretty raw. And so I was like, okay, what happens next? And I sort of imagined that what would happen next is she would walk home alone and feel a little sad. The sadness that she was trying to push away by finding someone new would find her on her walk home. And so then I wrote this song called All the Same, which has this really acoustic feel. And I think that all of this creative fiction, it helped me keep pace and figure out where to turn next musically. But I think also, you know, even though there's a character, and I'm going to put like air quotes around character at the center of this record, I think that it's actually in some ways maybe my most personal record because there's so many parts of me and really deep truths about my life and memories from when I was 18, 22, 25, 27, you know, it really is this big woven tapestry ode to my 20s. And there's so much truth in my life that I was able to actually tell by just conceptualizing that I was writing it about somebody else. But at the end of the day, the stories we tell are all fed by the people that we are and what's going on in our life.
Yeah. We're going to finish with Never Going Home. Is there anything else that you do want to say about it before?
You know, it's funny to end with Never Going Home because the thing that I keep saying about this record is that it actually really feels like coming home. I mean, I grew up making songs in my bedroom on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. And that girl at 15 or 16 would be so stoked to hear this record. And I think my career has taken this arc where I sort of weirdly got discovered in a moment of experimentation. And, you know, I love production so much. And my life and brain as a producer is always sort of first when I'm in the studio. It's always been the same songs at the center. I've just decided to dress them up in different ways because it is interesting to me. But this record to me is so relaxed. And my friends have said that it feels like the version of me that they know, which is kind of like the highest compliment to me that I could have received. And it really, there's something so grounded and relaxed about it to me that it really feels like coming home.
Here's Maggie Rogers, Never Going Home, on World Cafe.
So I put on those old hail boots. They've been waiting at the bottom of the closet low. I can't behave, but I don't want to be alone. But you kept me waiting. Now I'm never, ever going home. Never going home. Never going home.
You just heard Never Going Home from Maggie Rogers' new album, Don't Forget Me, on World Cafe. I'm Raina Duras, and Maggie Rogers has been my guest today. Maggie, thank you so much. It's always so great having you on.
Thank you so much, Raina. It's so nice to talk to you.
I'm Raina Duras, back in a moment with more World Cafe.
On this week's episode of Wildcard, actor Chris Pine tells us it's okay not to be perfect.
My film got absolutely decimated when it premiered, which brings up for me one of my primary triggers or whatever is like not being liked.
I'm Rachel Martin. Chris Pine on how to find joy in imperfection. That's on NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, the game where cards control the conversation.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell and show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR. Support for NPR and the following message come from Sattva. Sattva luxury mattresses are every bit as elegant as the most expensive brands, but because they're sold online, they're about half the price. Visit SAATVA.com/NPR and save an additional $200.